everyone. Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That right there is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We have a great Tuesday show for you today. You guys good? I forgot to ask. I have a little coffee everywhere. It's all over my pen. We had a little accident before the show started. That's
tighten
the best way
tight
to
right there, buddy.
He needs to tighten
up my little tie, little buddy. Good morning, Chris Carter. How are you doing?
Cigarette guy, let's go.
Cigarette guy.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Uh-huh. Oh, there's coffee
let's
everywhere.
Let's
okay.
go.
Antonio Brown's helmet gate has reached a conclusion. It turns out that guy CeCe was right. We'll explain. Tom Brady still
ready
plans
to, report
to
the
play
work,
until he's 45, but we are going to start the show with the latest on Dak Prescott, the multi-million dollar question. How much does Dak Prescott actually want? The Pro Bowl quarterback reportedly turned down Dallas's $30 million per year offer because Dak wants to become the highest paid quarterback in the $40 million per year range, though conflicting reports dispute this. A lot of millions regardless. So, Nick, is there anything Dak Prescott can do to prove he is worth all of this money, whether it is 30 or 40?
Get a lot better is the way he could do it. $40 million is... There have been talks around the league for the last few months that could Patrick Mahomes, in a year or two, become the league's first $40 million a year player? Could he get a five-year, $200 million contract from the Kansas City Chiefs? And the only reason I bring up Patrick Mahomes is he's the only player that that's been bandied about regarding. And all he had to do to have that be a question was set NFL records and win league MVP en route to a 50
touchdown. But it's also the timing.
Yes, of course, that he would be with now we see Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers around $35 million per year.
Yeah.
You think in a year the top quarterback would be $37-ish million. In a year or two, could the top quarterback at that age be $40 million? Possibly. So, yes, the timing and the high-level production. So, for Dak, what he has going for him is the timing. He does not yet have going for him anywhere near the high-level production. So how could he be worth $30 million per year, which is reportedly now by multiple people being reported he turned down? Build on those final eight games that you saw the best version of Dak that we've seen since his rookie season, and add to that. Not just continue that. Not just continue the production of those last eight games. Those last eight games were good. They weren't top quarterback, top five quarterback in the league good. He would have to add some explosive plays to it. He would have to decrease some of the time he holds onto the ball that leads to some of those sacks. He would have to add his ability to make some high-level NFL throws. In short, he would have to improve drastically to, in my mind, be worth north of 30 and have to improve an absolutely unrealistic amount to be worth anywhere near 40 when Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and the best in the league are in the mid-30s.
But we should expect the same jump in the quarterback salaries that we've seen over the last 2 years. Salary cap will continue to go up. The revenue, the NFL, the business is very successful. That's why the money is there. Just like 2 years ago, we never thought there'd be someone making $35 million. No, but the truth of the matter is, Russell Wilson, and I don't know the exact number, but I guarantee you Russell Wilson asked for $37, $38 million. How do you know that? Because they settled on $35. And I know that there was some going back and forth
sure.
in doing that. So, of course, Aaron Rodgers probably wanted $35 million at the time. All those. Carson Wentz, I guarantee he wanted $35 million before settling to the figure that he got to. So I'm not surprised that the money is there. And if you don't like the quarterbacks, and we're in an era where there's so many guys that can throw, there's so many guys that can put up 4,000-yard seasons, besides winning, that's the really only indicator for Dak as far as is he worth the money. In three seasons, only one quarterback has more wins than him in the regular season. That's Tom Brady. He's got 32. So that, to me, would justify wanting the $30 million salary. Right now, I don't like to say that people are overpaid, but if there was someone in the NFL that deserved $40 million, it would be Tom Brady. He would be the only one. But you're going to see in the next 24 months, there's going to be a quarterback that's going to get $40 million because the money is there. It's going to be a bargain to have a guy at $30 million.
So that's interesting. So, yes, he has the second most wins behind Tom Brady, but would you put Dak Prescott in the same category as Russell Wilson, as Aaron Rodgers, maybe even as Carson Wentz as far as talented quarterbacks?
Some people,
or does that not even matter?
Listen, some people can make the argument for Dak versus Carson Wentz. I've heard the argument. I understand there are some compelling points to it. To me, Dak does not pass the eye test versus Carson Wentz. No one would make the argument of him versus Aaron Rodgers, him versus Russell Wilson, him versus Ben Roethlisberger, him versus Matt Ryan, him versus the other top paid quarterbacks in football, let alone Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback anyone has ever seen. Like, to me, that is where the Cowboys are playing such a dangerous game, and where if I were advising them, Dak has potentially given them an escape hatch here. If the Cowboys are offering him right around Carson Wentz money, and he's blanching at that, and he is asking for, even if you shoot for the moon, land in the stars type of thing, he's asking for north of Russell Wilson money, the Cowboys, without going back on their word, could credibly say, we did plan to re-sign Dak Prescott. We did plan to make him one of the five highest-paid quarterbacks in football, as we've said. But he is asking for a number we cannot make work right now, just like we feel Zeke is asking for a number we cannot make work right now. And Dak is under contract for $2.1 million this year. The franchise tag next year would be $26 million. You right now, without doing a thing, could have Dak Prescott on your football team for the next 2 years for less than $30 million, and to get at least 32 games of information before you have to make a really tough decision after year five about an extension or a second franchise tag. Dak, to me, has opened that door to where if the Cowboys want to walk through it, they can, and it's not reneging on their promises that they have made about extending Dak Prescott.
I doubt if they'll do that right there, because there's just too much risk. Because in that, if you have your franchise quarterback, he can get hurt. And people say, well, he can get hurt with a long-term deal. Yeah, but then you're out searching for another quarterback. I just believe that Dak's going to get the deal signed before the season. Those last 2 weeks of the preseason is typically when these deals come. I know that we're getting rumors that, oh, man, he wants $40 million. I'm sure there's a deal out there to be made, all right? I'm sure that they're going to make that deal before the season starts, Jenna.
No, I was curious how ugly this could get. It seems like it got ugly with Ezekiel Elliott. I wonder if it can get ugly with Dak Prescott as well, none of which the Cowboys factored in at the beginning of the offseason.
I would say this. Dak's already there, and so he's not going to now leave. So it's not going to get ugly to that extent. There's only one quarterback negotiation that I can remember in the last decade or so, if we remove whatever's going on with Tom Brady in New England, that I would say got ugly, and that was Kirk Cousins in Washington. But that team didn't want him. They made that very clear. Like, they kept looking for reasons to move on from him. So I wouldn't expect this to get ugly unless the Cowboys took the route that I actually think they should take, which is let Dak play out this season.
I don't think the Redskins didn't want Kirk Cousins. They just weren't ready to commit to him long term.
Sure.
Because you don't put the franchise tag with the types of dollars that they put in his pocket for 2 years unless you want a guy. Right now, we just can't commit the dollars long term. But in that 2 year window,
he made a bunch of money.
Back here, first things first, we're joined by the dapper, well dressed former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott.
What'd it do?
Did I do something to my hair?
You got some highlights of touch-ups. It's looking good today.
Well, between the two of you guys, I get more attention here than I get anywhere else over the course of my day, and I mean you two. Well, Nick just realized I've been sitting next to you right here.
I mean,
you said that our daughters can't.
I said none of the above. I just don't want to hang out with you outside of work. I'd love for our kids to play together. When the Eagles gave Carson Wentz $128 million extension this offseason, Jenna,
yes,
you take it from here.
I will. It appeared they were all in on their franchise quarterback. We are happy to have you here, Bart. That despite the fact that Wentz has been plagued with injuries the last two seasons, that despite the fact that he had all of zero playoff appearances, but Carson Wentz pays no mind to all of that, says expectations are sky high, adding into this his fourth season.
It is what we expect around here. You know, it's the culture that we have. It's the expectations of this city and this fan base. Everybody knows that, but this culture of that coach sets first and then the leaders on this team, like, we fully expect to be playing late into the season. And it starts right here in training camp. And obviously on the personal side, like you said, I mean, I'm chomping at the bit to get my opportunity to play into January and everything as well.
Bart, there's a lot of optimism around this Eagles team on both sides of the ball. If there is a question, maybe it's on Carson Wentz and his health and durability. What has to happen for the Eagles to make a Super Bowl run this season?
Well, for them to make a Super Bowl run, this is the most talented roster, or one of the most talented rosters in the NFL. But last year, it was missing that thump. You know, they were able to get ahead in games. They brought DeSean Jackson back. It's going to stretch the field. It's going to make sure the safety has to stay high. They went out and got Malik Jackson. They have tremendous depth on the defensive side of the ball, bringing back Vinnie Curry, who couldn't be successful in Tampa, but now they understand how to use him as a situational pass rusher. But I think the addition of Miles Sanders, Darren Sproles coming back, now they have some thump behind there, because what happens is when you get ahead of games, you can't always depend on Carson Wentz to continue to try and throw the football. You have to be able to take the air out of the football. And you think about what Jay Ajayi, really gave them. You think about what LeGarrette Blount gave them. Gave them that physicality in between the tackles with one of the best offensive lines in the game. So once you get up by two scores with this defense can pin their ears back, you have to be able to take the air out of the game and limit the possessions once you get up two scores. And I think if they continue to stick to that recipe that they had, and I know that we have a motivated Carson Wentz because, you know, even though he's won a Super Bowl, he felt like he wasn't part of the run because he wasn't the quarterback under center. And the elephant in the room was Nick Foles, and they still could have kept Nick Foles. They decided to move on and say, listen, these are the keys to the car, and we go as you go, Carson Wentz. So he has that chip on his shoulder. So I have a talented roster with a quarterback that has a chip on his shoulder. I think that's going to have a tremendous good season.
And you mentioned Miles Sanders and Darren Sproles, and I'll add another name, Jordan Howard, a player I didn't think Chicago should have let go, who I think will be there between the tackles runner. That's what he did for Chicago with Tariq Cohen doing more of the lightning as far as the thunder and lightning combo. For the Eagles to live up to what are very lofty expectations for the second straight season, they had very high expectations last year. When you win a Super Bowl with Nick Foles, that's the expectations you're going to have. Yes, your first point is the most important one. Carson Wentz got to play 16 games, or at least very close. He, at the very least, has to finish the season healthy. Even if he gets dinged for a game or two during the year, the last 2 years he's not been able to finish the season healthy. I think an instant or near-instant rapport with DeSean Jackson will give the offense an extra element that they have not had since Wentz has been there. And then on defense, when this team was at its best, Chris would always say it, their big people were better than your big people. Yes, that was their offensive line, and they still have a great offensive line. Jason Kelce is fantastic. The right tackle, Lane Johnson, is one of the best in the business. And we know Jason Peters, when healthy, I mean, he's a future Hall of Fame potential caliber player. But that D-line, no Michael Bennett. What they do is they, in the draft, they take Josh Sweat. I know he's a mid-round pick, but, man, he seems to have some freaky ability as far as coming off the edge. Mentioned bring back Vinnie Curry. We know how good Fletcher Cox is. They bring in Malik Jackson to play alongside him. These are all moves that should make what was their strength, their Super Bowl winning season, their strength once again, which is defensive line rotation, getting after the quarterback, because I do think there are legitimate questions about the back half of the defense. Right. I think the defensive line's excellent. The linebacking core and secondary, you could pick apart. But those are the things that have to happen for this Eagles team to live up to the expectations a lot of people have for them, which is win that division, be in contention for the number one seed in the NFC, and to get back to a Super Bowl.
CeCe, we talk a lot about the same thing Bart said, that this is, some say, one of the most complete teams. Mm-hmm. But yet, what's the identity of the Philadelphia Eagles come into this season? It seems like they're very good at all different positions, but who are they really? Where are they going to shine?
Wow, that's a good question there. I think their identity has to be in their personnel. Because top to bottom, Howie Roseman, when you talk to people around the league, Howie Roseman is one of the best, and he has earned that right. After taking a back seat when Chip Kelly was there, they thought he was useless. Now that he regained his power, you can see that the way this roster is built, top to bottom, they have an emphasis on getting to the quarterback and protecting the quarterback. And you think their offensive line is one of the best in the business. They went out and fortified that, drafted the kid Dillard in the
first round.
So now they have a competent backup, or maybe move one of those tackles into guard to even fortify the middle of that line. So I would say their identity is, man, they got a good roster. And what is Carson Wentz's potential? And if they're going to have Super Bowl aspiration, Carson Wentz has to live up to being the first pick in the draft. Legitimate question on the secondary, as far as their corners, will their cornerbacks be stable enough the way they were in their Super Bowl run? Their secondary played fabulous as the season went on. Yeah. Middle linebacker Zach Brown. Watch him coming over from Washington. Speed guy. Can cover guys out of the backfield. And I believe also he has that type of attitude. He hadn't played in a lot of primetime games, but I know him from his days when he transitioned from college to the pros. I think he fits into that Eagles culture. But ultimately, it's about the guy they gave the big money to. Carson Wentz, his ability to be able to orchestrate Philadelphia, and can he stay healthy? Because I believe the weapons around him are the best that he's had since he's been there. But they need to give him some easy stuff. Yeah. Third downs. You don't have to throw the ball all the time. Let's put some thump in there with Jordan Howard. Also, Sproles coming out of the backfield. And every once in a while, I'm going to throw the ball to the guy in the history of the NFL that's been better than anyone else. That's DeSean Jackson. Excuse me. How many of those 60-yard touchdowns can they create, which make it easy for Carson? You can't always have 8, 10, 12 play drives. So let's get him some easy stuff as he goes into, to me, which I should be his prime, which I don't believe that he's reached yet, Bart.
Yeah, you talk about those easy throws as well, and the easiest throws for quarterbacks are up those seams, right? So now you're going to be able, with the addition of DeSean Jackson, that's going to take the top off the defense, draw the safety, and who's going to eat the most? Zach Ertz, who's the biggest mismatch, maybe the best pass catching receiving, or definitely top five in the league. But now Nelson Aguilar is able to go back to his natural position, slot, where he can be off the ball, where now you can't jam him off the line because now he's going to have a free release. I think it's going to open everything up. This roster is balanced. It has depth, and it can sustain injuries. You know, and you talk about the secondary. The secondary played a lot better in the playoffs. You know, they were giving up deep balls early in the game, you know, early in the season. But how do you do that? If you can't have elite defensive backs, you have to have pass rush because now that allows you to keep too deep, and now you can make sure that you have help for everybody.
And one other point, you guys both mentioned Howie Roseman. Howie Roseman and the Eagles front office is quietly sitting there saying, Zeke, because stay firm, man. You deserve to be the highest paid running back in the league. They look at that division. Washington is figuring out who their quarterback the future is going to be. The Giants are figuring out whatever the hell they're figuring out.
Daniel Jones is great.
Right, they got, they have one team that could compete with them in this division. It's Dallas Cowboys, and right now their best player is not in the United States of America. So right now they are hoping that stays the case for as long as possible.
In just a second, but first, Greece taking on Iran in a FIBA World Cup tune-up. This is Giannis going coast to coast right there.
Man, with the lineup we're going to be running out there, the American squad, I wouldn't be shocked if Giannis just carries Greece to a shocking title here. Like, I mean, we got a Plumlee brother on our team. They got the league MVP on theirs. Giannis out there getting that work. What up?
Oh, I thought the team was going to be nothing but brothers. You said Plumlee brother. That threw me off.
No, Joe
Next
Harris
up,
on the team.
Dejan Giroux of the University of Houston throwing down a big alley-oop while on tour in Italy.
Oh, okay.
Good young player.
A lot of people there.
Nice catch there.
Come on, Jenna.
It's hard in the summer, Jenna. Especially a college team. You get great experience traveling abroad. That was
Syracuse
one of the great things
Italy
my
too.
Brother liked doing in Indiana.
Oh my God.
Isaiah Rivera tapping the ball off the foot. Throwing it down.
This is the kid we saw yesterday, or the man we saw yesterday. I don't know his age.
I'm telling you, the NBA is missing it, all right? We have all these outstanding dunkers at one time. Let's have an open competition, NBA All-Star game. Let's get it going, man. You might force LeBron to stop dunking with his kids and get out there and dunk against the real grown-ups.
All right, to the Colts now. You know the script. Ooh. Andrew Luck has a nagging injury that we don't know much about that has kept him sidelined for months now. Or in other words, it is deja vu all over again. Well, here's the latest. The Colts GM said yesterday, in the course of dealing with Luck's calf injury, it appears that now we've got an ankle issue. Luck's week one status against the Chargers is now uncertain. Keep in mind, this happened back in April. That is almost 5 months ago. He has played practiced three times since then. See, now what is your level of concern with Andrew Luck?
Red alert, really high. When we mentioned this a couple weeks ago, as far as the calf when we start training camp, was I concerned as far as, because right now in sports, you have to realize what we're going through. What happened to Kevin Durant sent shockwaves, not only through the NBA, but through sports, anyone who works out, anyone who has a calf strain, you are going to at least think about what happened to KD. Because the Colts, you can tell, They talked about it. They talked about the Kevin Durant situation. Not around it. They talked about
his. The head coach did. Jim Irsay did.
They all sat down and talked about it. Because you can believe that what happens to athletes, it's a ripple effect. So right now, with Andrew Luck, this is something that I've never seen. I've seen guys try to rehab injuries, and because of compensation, typically either they strain a hamstring, strain their other calf because their body is not balanced. But Andrew Luck, I do know this. He is a workaholic. And if he is not on the practice field, not practicing, and for the duration, you pointed out April, originally diagnosed in April, they've had a number of scans, several scans on the calf. This is a problem. All the time that they've missed, young receivers trying to get rapport. How do they build on Eric Ebron, the Pro Bowl season he had last year, the second round pick out of Ohio State, Paris Campbell? It slows down his overall development. Yes, this is a huge concern. If you're talking about a team that could come from the normal teams we talk about and win the Super Bowl,
it's them.
It could be the Colts.
Man, they were 1-5, and they won 11 games in a row, including the dominating playoff win over Houston until they ran into Kansas City. They were extraordinary last season down the stretch. They had to be, or they won 10 of 11, I think it was, down the stretch, including the playoff win, I should say. And now here's where we're at with Luck. Jenna, you touched on it. Since April, missed all of OTAs, missed minicamp, has practiced three times in a limited capacity. It was a calf strain. The owner, Jim Irsay, in an interview yesterday said he's dealing with a small bone issue, which, according to doctors in Indianapolis, there's some speculation it's calcification due to the calf strain. Not just so it seems like a bone, but it's not like a bone like you'd have in your
like
foot or your arm.
Or whatever,
exactly.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about his ankle. This is really dangerous territory for Andrew Luck. In 2015, he missed half the year. In 2016, he played almost the whole year, but he was compromised clearly. In 2017, he did not play at all. And so you cannot discuss him at this point, this deep into his career, without discussing a major health concern. And which you never saw. You didn't see it at Stanford. His first 3 years, he was 16, 16, 16, played all those games. But it is not, I'd almost feel better if this were a recurring shoulder injury. But this is totally different part of the body, a totally different issue he's dealing with. I do want to ask you one quick question. See, he had said, I'm not going to play if I'm not 100%. It's not fair to my team. It's what the team needs. Okay, that's fine for the preseason. Once the regular season starts, should that be his standard, that he is not going to go out there if he's not 100% with a calf injury?
Well, you have to realize we can't hold him accountable what he said in training camp in the offseason. The stakes aren't the same.
Right.
All right? So why be out there when I know that I'm only limited? And he had a window to try to heal. In that window, he didn't heal. So I believe that even if, just like the guys that are on PUP right now, you know when the doctors tell them they can come back? Right. It's amazing how all
Labor
these
Day.
Injuries. When?
Around Labor Day.
Listen, we got 100 different injuries. All of them are going to heal up after Labor Day weekend.
Sure.
So I understand that. Andrew Luck is a professional. He will push himself. I totally disagree with you. I would much rather it be the shoulder. Absolutely not. Because you can't play football with a bad shoulder. You can get in the shotgun, hand the ball off, quick sets, get the ball out of your hand, and still be effective as a quarterback. Now, the one positive thing about the Colts, they got the best backup in Jacoby Brissett in the NFL. Him and Teddy Bridgewater, you can have your argument which one you think. I believe both of them will be starters in the near future. But if there is something that you can look from a positive standpoint, they do have Jacoby there, who also filled in for Luck 2 years ago when he was hurt and is very, very familiar with their personnel and their offense.
So that's what I was going to bring up. At what point, after you've seen what has happened the last couple of years, do you say, all right, maybe we should give Jacoby Brissett a little more attention, get him out there with the ones a little bit more? Maybe this
well,
is the
he's
direction.
He's getting all the time.
Now he is, but looking at him maybe more as the future and not just the backup.
No. You don't ever give up on your kid. You don't ever give up on Andrew Luck. Like, you know what I mean? You can't.
There we go. That's a new Nick, right?
I mean, but at okay. some
no, no.
point,
hey, Jenna.
You can't.
We just got Nick apologizing to Andrew Luck for the beginning of his career.
For the beginning and middle portion when he was hurt. Jenna, your kid.
He's an Uber superstar.
Yeah, we're all parents. Like, your kid can go to rehab as many times as he needs to. You're going to keep, man, you're all.
We talk so much about windows and this is a good window for them, if you don't know who you're going to get out there.
The window doesn't exist without him.
Yeah, but let me answer this.
They have to have.
Let me answer this. Because their situation is better, they will err on the side of caution. Luck has signed up for a long time. Mm-hmm. They are not desperate. Like you say, he says the Cowboys are desperate this year to put. No, they're not desperate. They got a young team. They got salary cap. And they're more apt to be patient and go with Jacoby to be able to start it off, knowing that they might be able to keep Andrew healthier for a portion of the season. So that portion, I totally agree with you, yes.
And on the Jacoby Brissett situation, it would, to me, we have all this cap space. They didn't use a lot of it this year. They're going to have it next year. Jacoby's a pending free agent. I might prioritize bringing him back, even if Luck gets back early in the season, if he plays all 16 games. Just to clarify the point I was making about the shoulder quickly, I agree with you that for a quarterback, shoulder injury is the worst thing. The point I was trying to make, and it was maybe made the wrong way because he is a quarterback, is it's now a totally different type of injury that's hampering him. It's not a player who has one recurring injury throughout their career. We've now dealt
with it. But it's not career ending.
It's not career ending, but it's
Andrew Luck with his shoulder thought his career was definitely altered. And even he had anxiety thinking he could never play the same way he had played before.
All right, let's take a break. Although there's still the same amount of mystery around this injury,
as there was
with the shoulder.
And Mangini would talk about their health, their training staff. Like, what? It's multiple years now.
All right, we'll talk much more about this later on in the show. But coming up, why do the Giants want to keep rookie Daniel Jones off the field in year one? That's next on First Things First. Time for us to go viral. Adam Gase is in his first season as Jets head coach, along with Le'Veon Bell. Training camp is reaching the dog days, so sometimes you need a little extra motivation. Check out defensive lineman Bronson Kaufusi getting his teammates excited.
USC. We saw the kid from USC with his dad. I think it was the kid from USC last year who his dad, I think that's the haka, did that dance, which is a cultural thing,
yes,
before one of the games. It was LSU last year. My apologies, not USC. Last year. That's really cool. That's really cool.
Except, did you see the offense that they were?
They got to fight against him.
They didn't take it as well as
the defense was basically demonstrating what he had taught them. Mm-hmm. So the offense was not aware of it. They were just standing there at attention. That's what that was.
They weren't trying to get them all involved.
It was a defensive thing.
They were uninvolved.
Absolutely.
They're going against each other, man.
No,
and battling for jobs.
I understand. Want to get everybody up and going. I'm very inclusive when it comes to hype and everything. Mm-hmm.
That's what Jenna's known for. Her inclusivity when it comes to hype.
Meet Jenna in the gym and you'll see how inclusive.
No, then I'm on my own. Uh-huh. Yeah, time for stories to start your morning. Not without that much muscle. After missing more than a week of practice with his frostbitten feet and because he didn't like his helmet, Antonio Brown officially returned to Raiders training camp yesterday. Hasn't actually taken the field yet, but John Gruden does expect AB to be ready for week one. Chris Carter, will Antonio's on-field production make up for the off-field drama?
Well, wide receivers have done this for years, and coaches, general managers, they accept it. So, yes, he is a phenomenal football player. He has unusual quickness off the line of scrimmage. His catch and run in the NFL is second to none. You can get him the ball in short space. He can beat a double team. He is phenomenal. I mean, he is phenomenal. He's gotten so much better, got his body stronger, gotten faster since he's been in the league. He's a great football player,
and we do associate this position with the more diva-ish behavior, but the teams that accept the most diva behavior are the teams that their winning is coinciding with it. Chad Ochocinco, Chad Johnson, it was all good when the Bengals were on the come up.
Well, they started
on the downside, all of a sudden we don't have time for it. With T.O. and with Randy, and Randy wasn't as much of a diva as T.O., but when the team, when you're going to the Super Bowl, you deal with it. When all of a sudden it's not there, you move on. That's my concern for AB and the Raiders.
All right, we are moving on. Texans defensive end Jadeveon Clowney is still holding out with recent reports that the All-Pro could be on the trading block. All right, Nick, where would you like to see Clowney end up?
I think there's a few interesting options. If the Texans reportedly want to trade him for an offensive lineman, the team that I find the most interesting is the one you just saw him sacking the quarterback on. What about Philadelphia? What about Philadelphia adding to that defensive line rotation? They have four competent NFL tackles, a great right tackle, a Hall of Fame left tackle, first-round pick, and Vitae, who we saw fill in more than competently a couple years ago. So I think Philly would be an excellent combination. I don't know what the Texans are doing, by the way, when it comes to one of the best players on
the team. Yeah, Philly can't absorb his cap, the cap hit that he'll have. He's going to make too much money. They just paid Carson Wentz. They played Brandon Graham 2 years ago. That set the structure that they had to get rid of our guy. Yeah, that's why they had to send him off to New England. So, no, he needs to stay right there with the Texans. I believe he's an overrated football player. I believe the price tag is too high for him. I would stay there with J.J. Watt and the rest of that wrecking crew that they have there with the Texans.
All right, moving on. With contract negotiations still looming for Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, and Ezekiel Elliott, Cowboys owner Jerry Jones is not worried. He's preaching patience. See, should the Cowboys have a sense of urgency in locking up the big three?
No. No, absolutely not. Because if they rush to it, they're going to make a mistake. It's already going to be tough enough to be able to pull it off over the next year and a half. The only way this is going to work is if they get Zeke to say, hey man, my contract demands, we'll do that next year. Amari, take the franchise tag, and let's try to work out a reasonable deal for Dak. But everything, nothing is leaning in their favor except that Amari said, I'm not in a rush. Dak wants over $30 million, and Zeke wants to reset the market as a running back. They got problems on the way, and this won't be worked out anytime soon.
And of the three players, the only one that's proven as top of the league at his position or even close to it is Zeke. He's also the one with the most off-field issues. In fact, he's the only one with any off-field issues and the most years left on his contract. So it doesn't coincide with their priorities, his priorities. I think they would be best served if Dak continues to keep his demands at such a high level to walk away from the table with Dak Prescott and say, price too high, we'll revisit this later. I don't know if that's going to work with Zeke.
All right, let's move on to the Packers now. All 158 of Aaron Rodgers' starts have come under one head coach. So when Green Bay brought in a new, young, up-and-coming rookie coach in Matt LaFleur this offseason, rumblings immediately began to the tune of, could these two coexist? But if you ask Aaron Rodgers, the relationship is the least of his worries.
You have to set aside your ego and sensitivity and communicate honestly about your feelings, and then know who the boss is. I think he said it best the other night and made a kind of a crack about it. We have a great line of communication, but I'm not sitting up here wishing people, I wish you just knew this. I don't care. Look, I don't need to go out and prove to anybody how great Matt and I are getting along, or him stand up there and say how great it's been. Like, look, we're having a great time, we're communicating, and the conjecture is for clickbait news stories you guys can put on your websites.
Why are you laughing, CeCe?
He's a funny guy. He's a funny guy. I do like a portion of the soundbite there, and as far as he doesn't have to prove that him and the coach get along. Nobody care. Don't nobody care about Brady and Belichick. It's just a matter of, we know who the boss is, and we know they get the job done. Now, people try to have these questions. Oh, who's more deserving of the credit? Who's more responsible? At the end of the day, it don't matter. You got one boss. He's the head coach. As long as Aaron Rodgers knows that, whatever their relationship is, it doesn't matter. It's about the results. Are they going to be a physical football team then? Are they going to run the ball and utilize their running back? Is their defense, based on all the money they spent, going to live up to, they changed the structure of this team? Did it pay off in the first offseason? Those are the things that are really important for the Green Bay Packers, because the Green Bay Packers need to try to get themselves back into the playoff and give that guy a chance to win another Super Bowl. That's the winning formula. That's what's important. How many games are going to win? Can they get to the playoffs? It's not a matter of Matt LaFleur, Aaron Rodgers, how well they're getting along. Football is three phases: special teams, defense, and offense. We only talk about one phase in Green Bay, and that's the phase with Aaron Rodgers and the coach. Aaron Rodgers is a great player. He can play in any system in the NFL. He can adapt to any system probably better than any other quarterback, him and Patty Mahomes. Both of them have mobility. Both of them have a rocket arm. If you want to run the ball 40 times, they're great in play action. So I don't have a problem. I think Aaron's going to have a problem with the coach. The results are what we should be concerned about in Green Bay.
But, Nick, how much of those results will be based on their relationship? How much of everything CC just laid out is based on those two getting along, the coach and the quarterback?
This year, I think minimally, and I think this year that I would be flabbergasted if this year publicly Rodgers and LaFleur don't get along great, because it is in both of their best interests. Their incentives are perfectly aligned here. I do not know if last year McCarthy and Rodgers' incentives were perfectly aligned, because I think one of Rodgers' incentives might have been, I'd like a new head coach. And so, but Rodgers knows that the best case scenario for him is that Matt LaFleur is his head coach the rest of the way, because the only way he's not is if they have another disastrous season or two and they have to move on. And now we're entering the late 30s of Aaron Rodgers' career. Matt LaFleur knows that there were some people around the league that were like, really? This is going to be the head coach of the Green Bay Packers. And if he flames out with that guy at quarterback, his next job's not going to be NFL head coach. He might get that eventually again, but he's going to have to go back to the coordinating rung. So it is in both of these guys' best interest to set whatever ego they have aside to a degree and make it work, figure it out. And I trust Rodgers' talent as much as any quarterback in the league. And I don't know that much about Matt LaFleur's football mind, except for talking to Chris, who sat down with Matt LaFleur last year when the Titans' offense looked pretty pedestrian, if I'm being honest. And Chris said before we had any idea who was going to be the head coach of the Packers, man, that coordinator kind of coordinating with a hand tied behind his back.
Yes.
If he had real talent at quarterback, if he had a better roster, I think he'd be a really interesting NFL play caller. That was 3 months before we knew he was going to have the most talented quarterback as the franchise quarterback of his team. So I don't think this will be a major story this year. And I understand Rodgers' frustration, because there hasn't been a real reason for us to talk about it except for the fact of what Rodgers' other relationships have been like.
But in continuing to do this, we are missing a good story. This is the best Green Bay team they've had the last 5 years. We keep talking about the coach and the quarterback as if they already have a problem, and we're missing the fact that this might be our Super Bowl champ. Because if they give Aaron Rodgers any type of help, have we forgotten who Aaron Rodgers is? Like, this is a good football team. People in Minnesota are terrified of Green Bay and terrified of the Bears, and rightfully so, because both of them are very talented.
And one of the big complaints with the Packers prior to this past year was not about the coach as much as it was about the structure, management. They don't spend money in free agency. They're not active there. They don't bring in talent. This offseason, brought in some talent. Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, they went out there and got two pass rushers in that regard. You've talked about them upgrading their running game. Rodgers, when healthy, makes the playoffs. That's been the case every year of his career. If he's healthy this year, I totally agree with Chris Carter. It would not shock me at all if this team represents the NFC in the Super Bowl.
People didn't know my last name either.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, CC, Chris Carter.
I'm sure nobody wants the season to start faster than Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers to get off this topic. So we will do just that. Moving on to the Giants now, a couple of things we do know. Eli Manning is 38 years old. He's on the back end of his career, and clearly, according to Giants brass, still good enough to start and thrive. But when the Giants spent their sixth overall draft pick this year on Duke quarterback Daniel Jones, many expected a QB battle to begin immediately. But not Giants owner John Mara. He still thinks Eli, who won them two Super Bowls, can win them more.
I hope Eli has a great year and Daniel never sees the field. I mean, that would be in an ideal world that you'd like to see that. So, again, it's at the end of the day, it's going to be a decision by the head coach as to when, you know, or if Daniel ends up playing this year.
Is that's really, I mean, obviously you want the team to win a lot of games and make the playoffs, but if Daniel doesn't play one snap as a rookie, you'd be okay with that?
I'd be very happy about that because it means that we're having a great year and Eli's having a great year.
What was your reaction to that, Nick?
Well, I understand what he's saying, believe it or not. Yeah, the idea is that, hey, if we start off 10-3 and we're the story of the league, the surprise story, that means Eli's playing great. It means Daniel Jones isn't a part of it. And that's what their goal is. To me, but that's not going to happen. Like, just go ahead and set that aside. Like, that's not a realistic scenario. What is more interesting is, what if the Giants are better than I expect them to be and just middling? Right around 500 all year long.
Yeah.
And you're, with 3 weeks left in the season.
They have a good December.
Yeah, with exactly right. With 3 weeks left in the season, you're 7-6. It's like, wait, if we reel off these next three, we can sneak into the playoffs. Remember when we snuck into the playoffs in 2007 or 2011? In that scenario, that I actually believe is the worst case scenario for the Giants. Because that will keep Daniel Jones on the sideline, prevent him from getting real game experience. It will give them false hope about Eli moving forward. It will slow this whole process down. So, of course, you'd prefer with a month left to be 11-2. You know what might be better? You know what might be the second best option, pardon me, is to be 2-11. And have Daniel Jones already with 2 months of starting with a few games left to go in the season. And John Mara, understandably, is the owner and chairman. He doesn't even want to think about that possibility. But that is a real possibility. It might be the more likely of the possibilities. And that's the one Giants fans and management has to prepare for.
Yeah, the Giants, and I love the Mara family. Man, they've done a tremendous job. But they've been put under the gun in these little sound bites the last number of years. Yeah. And a lot of them have proved to be wrong what they were saying. But they started off with the initial. I asked this question. What team in the NFL could have lost, had a losing record 5 out of the last 6 seasons and would be comfortable with their starting quarterback who was part of all that? No other team to me besides the New York Football Giants. This team has had a losing season 5 out of the last 6. So him sitting there saying Eli is getting ready to have a great year, which matches the comments of the general manager, Gettleman. Oh, Eli surprisingly had a great year last year. I'm still waiting on that footage to be revealed to the world. So the Giants are in a bad situation. Anytime you draft a quarterback in the top 10, and we know the situation for Eli, those 2 Super Bowls, man, are over every decision that they've made with Eli the last couple years. They fired the coach when he benched him.
Right. And the owner just said that it's the coach's decision. But is it really? Because the last coach that made that decision
was no longer there.
I mean, the decision was then revoked a week later.
And nor is the general manager.
And he was fired.
They were both let go.
Absolutely.
But this is an organization that is unlike any other in the league in their, lack of a better term, obsession with their quarterback. These glory days of the 2 Super Bowls has seemingly gotten him, you know, carte blanche to play out the end of his career however he seems to want to. And Eli's a great guy. Everyone loves Eli Manning, so it's hard to fight against him, even though you go ahead and they spend that 6th overall draft pick on a quarterback, even though their fans and seemingly everyone else seems to want to push Eli out.
Yes, for the ownership there, for the management there, it would be. For them, Eli to have a very good year and decide this would be his last year. Daniel Jones is not ready to play NFL football. Now, the Giants have put themselves in this predicament by drafting him. They've also put this confidence in Eli. Eli has not played spectacular the last several years. He's been one of the most inconsistent quarterbacks that we've seen in the NFL the last 20 years. So to think that this year, with the lack of weapons, with an offensive line that I believe will be in the bottom half as far as most productive offensive line, yeah, they got one superstar, and it's Barkley, and they're getting ready to ride that mule until he passes out.
And they're trying to have it both ways. Listen, the New York Giants, to mix metaphors here, are in the afternoon signing up for Tinder and Bumble and in the evening going to marriage counseling. Pick a lane. You can't be flirty, seeing what's next, while also saying we're...
I don't even know.
Okay, I'll explain.
You have an idea.
You're looking to see what's out there,
you're
testing the waters, while also saying we're going to make this work. No, you can't do both. You can't pare away your talent, draft a quarterback number 6, and say we know what phase we're in, and then also say our year 16 quarterback is a guy we think can start for the next year or two, still has great football in front of him. Pick a lane. They're trying to ride on the median. That results in car crashes. And that's unfortunately what I think they're going to face a lot of this year.
we'll get to Baker Mayfield in just a second. But first, a couple of highlights from last night. Dodgers and Marlins, and John Berti making a terrific running, diving grab on the outfield grass.
My man got some wheels. He was off on the crack of the bat. You see that, Nick? Just like they teach you in Little League. Jump stop when the pitcher's pitching. Man, he got off. He has some speed.
Nice speed here. Chargers practice. Mike Williams skies over the defender for the touchdown.
Big year for Mike Williams now. Got to build on some success from last season. See if, I mean, they drafted him to one day overtake Keenan Allen as the number one. That obviously has not happened. We'll see if that duo has, in theory, could be one of the better duos in football. If
he hadn't lived up to that first round draft pick, Jenna. And you're right, that wasn't a great catch, but he hadn't done a whole bunch.
Oh, that was
Dolphins
a very good
Dolphins and
catch.
Bucks joint practice here. Tampa Bay's Chris Godwin burns Xavien Howard with the one-handed catch. Howard, by the way, NFL's highest paid corner.
And one of the
nice
best.
Nice job here.
That's a nice little play by Godwin.
Come on, let's check out that right foot at the end.
Oh, he's not in bounds. I agree. Oh, speaking of that, I'm glad you mentioned that. You still owe me $100 from the last inbounds, out of bounds. I'm glad you mentioned that. Good highlight.
Wait,
good.
That he wasn't in bounds there? No. It looked like he was. Look, one.
Wait, no, one?
Right there.
Two, yeah. Okay,
you're right, Jenna. Jenna's right. My $100 is back. Good
Wait,
bet, Chris.
What do you mean?
Good bet. Way to go, Jenna. Way to go, Jenna. Instant replay.
What just happened?
Yes. Just get happened. Even.
Love you guys. Moving on to the Browns now. So the last time Cleveland won a playoff game, Baker Mayfield wasn't even born yet.
Wait, really?
I wasn't even done with college. Yeah. 25 years later, with his team all but daring the league to beat him, Baker is fully embracing the idea of getting Cleveland back to the promised land, saying, quote, hey, people want to see us lose just because the hype is so real. Nick, what's your reaction to Baker's comments, and where were you 25 years ago?
We should do that.
Where was I? 25 years ago, I was in third grade. I was 9 years old. 25 years ago, Chris Carter was...
Was that the first time in third grade or the time they held you back?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
What was 1995?
1995, Chris Carter was a two-time Pro Bowler at that point, maybe three-time Pro Bowler at that point.
1995.
You had just set the NFL record.
Yeah.
And Jenna, you were on your...
Still in college.
Yeah.
Young and in college.
I was getting ready to go for 122 and 17. That year.
Oh, yeah.
122 catches.
Catches and 17, yeah. Warren Moon. So we were all in little
Where
different places. I was in third grade.
For the second.
Okay. So, listen, that was startling. I knew the Browns hadn't won a playoff game forever, but it is interesting that Baker literally wasn't born yet. I don't look at the Browns as a hype team. I look at the Browns as a very, very promising team. And I disagree with Baker that I think he's creating a chip on his shoulder because that's what he's always had. I think he's creating a narrative that it can't be no one believes in us because you're talking about hype. It now has to be everybody hates us. But the reality is everybody didn't hate the Browns. People are rooting against the Patriots, some people, because they're sick of them. Some people rooting against the Cowboys because they get so much coverage. People are either believe that the Browns are overhyped or they're more like me and they're really excited to see what they can do this year. Even if it's not the team you root for, man, I can't wait to watch them on Sunday Ticket, see what Baker and Odell are going to be. But so I understand why Baker's doing this. In sports, for as long as sports have existed, the nobody believes in us chip has been a useful one and one that teams try to go to.
Worked for the Eagles.
Well, and even, I mean, what was it? Was it the Patriots last year that because they weren't the overwhelming favorites, they all of a sudden decided nobody believes in us? Even when it's fake, teams try to create it because that is a good go-to in sports. If you can't go to that, then the us against the world is the next best option. Everyone's against us. And so that's, to me, what Baker's trying to do, even though I don't think his commentary is exactly accurate with this.
Can I just say, I think what he meant was a little bit what Eric Mangini was on The Herd the other day, and he was telling Colin, the more that the Browns talk, the more opposing teams are looking on their schedule. Oh, we got the Browns? All right, pipe down a little bit. Maybe we get up a little bit more for this game. Maybe we have a little more edge to us in this game. So maybe it's less we hate you and more, oh, they're going to be gunning for us this season. Could it be that's what Baker means as well?
Every year there are several teams that through free agency and through the draft, there are great expectations. Jacksonville Jaguars were just like the Cleveland Browns. Except Jacksonville didn't have as long of a bad history, but they were not winning games, and they started drafting players. Jalen Ramsey started saying stuff, and then what people started saying, we're coming after the Jags now. They're coming after their head. So I'm not concerned about what the league is saying because this is what I do know. if you are a good football team and you are a bad football team, when they toss that coin up and they say heads or tails after that, they are trying to knock your head off. So Baker and all players in New England, you know what they're saying? It's us against the world. All right? It's an overplayed phrase. Everyone is trying to utilize it. But Baker and them, they do have. There are people out there doubting because the product. We only saw 7 games with Baker because of the long history.
7 wins.
Wins with Baker. And because of the long history that they've had as far as losing, it's hard to take them serious. Yep. And to me, they're young players. They have a very good nucleus because Baker being the leader and having success last year without OBJ. Just like when they went from Hugh, people forget what actually happened. They start playing some good, solid football. They start running the ball. They start protecting the quarterback. They started not just throwing the ball to Jarvis Landry. Before, when Hugh was there, Jarvis Landry was targeted 12 times. After Hugh left, he was only targeted less than 7. So they started attacking defenses with all their personnel. And then they added OBJ. And one of the huge components that Nick likes to talk about when him and I talk about is no one talks about their defense.
Right.
Myles Garrett could be defensive MVP. He could have 20 sacks this season, and Sheldon Richardson being added, Olivier Vernon coming over from the Giants. Like, this is a very good collection of young guys who have not accomplished a whole bunch in the NFL. Now they're going about it with the inexperienced coach, which I believe is the biggest question mark with Cleveland moving
forward. It's the big that and their offensive line to a degree. Greg Robinson at left tackle is going to leave some people a little concerned. It's one of the reasons why some people have speculated, could the Browns be a team that calls up Washington and sees if they actually do want to trade Trent Richardson? Now, that would be a true all-in move on Cleveland, who's already made a lot of very aggressive moves. Trent Richardson's former running back. Trent Williams from Washington.
Yeah, Cleveland they can't trade back for him.
No, they can't.
They traded him to Indy.
They got a first-round pick for Trent Richardson years ago. But the other point on the defense is they made what I now, benefit of hindsight, in real time I didn't get it, but I think I understand it better now, made a savvy pick at number 4 with Denzel Ward last year. When everyone, I think everyone thought they were going to take the pass rusher, Chubb, they looked at it, maybe correctly, as you know what nobody has enough of in this league right now? Corners. And you know what we think we're going to be able to do is find a pass rusher to pair opposite Myles Garrett through free agency. They did it with Olivier Vernon. So they draft Denzel Ward to supplement their back end. But when we're talking about overhyped, to me, to be overhyped, you have to not only be hyped, but have nothing. It's all just thought. Like the Niners, to me, are overhyped. We haven't seen the Niners be good with this regime, with this quarterback, once. There hasn't been a stretch of time where it's like, wow, the Niners look
amazing. We gave them a pass, though. Jimmy G, and we like him. We like Shanahan. We like John Lynch. We're not criticizing them, but they have done nothing.
Done nothing, and a lot of people, Vegas says they're projected wins is 8.5.
Vegas is projecting these guys to make the playoffs and to do well in the playoffs. And I know there were 3 games last year that had they won, they would probably be in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And win the division and beat the Steelers. I mean, there are people who said they could go to the Super Bowl. That doesn't sound like overhyped to you when we've not seen anything more than a small sample size last season?
This is the thing. What they have is real. They have what we're searching for. We couldn't have these shows if they didn't have the talk about NFL quarterbacks. So now we have a Heisman Trophy winner, not like a bunch of other ones, who can play pro football. Wow, his skills adapt to the pro game, and he's in a city that people would love to see a winner. Great football fans, the weather there, the character there. Yeah, it's not hype, though. Like, he's a good – Is the coach worthy to be a head coach in the NFL? I can understand if you're going to question that. But if you're questioning Baker Mayfield, his ability, you're wrong. John Dorsey, his ability to put together a competent team, hire a coach – you're wrong. And they got star players up and down. Not only 22-year-olds, they got some 26-year-old, 28-year-old. They don't have a bunch of guys in their 30s. So if you look at a young roster, I don't see a more promising young roster in the NFL than the Cleveland Browns have.
And every year, there's going to be a third of the playoff teams from the previous year that are out and at least 4 new ones in. It's usually 5. Some years it's 6. So if you have to pick some teams that didn't make it last year. Sure. To me, it logic passes. How about a team that was only two games out of the playoffs, who was playing a rookie quarterback, who made a change at head coach that, even though there's questions about Kitchens, to me, there's not questions about Hugh. There's answers, and they're not great ones, that also added the most talented receiver, one of the most talented receivers in the league, and a pass rusher, and has other young guys that you expect to improve.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Now, could they fall flat on their faces? Could Baker have a sophomore slump?
Of course.
Could Freddie Kitchens not know how to do anything regarding clock management? All those things are on the board. But if I'm out there and I'm like, man, who's going to be that was out last year in this year? I'd sure as hell rather pick the Browns than the Bills. They got a second-year quarterback. To me, it makes sense. The logic follows. Yeah,
if Freddie Kitchens was only the offensive coordinator and he didn't have any of that game experience that he had last year, then I would be more apt to say, you know something, I'm going to wait a year on the Browns. But I saw him. I saw him run their offense. I saw the control he had and the command he had of that room there in Cleveland. So I believe in it. So it's not hype. Talent is the most important thing. Chemistry, character, all those other things. I am a little bit concerned about their wide receiving core, spreading the ball around, body language on the sidelines.
Right.
I am concerned about those little type of things. But those are good worries to have.
Right. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.